The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. I'm Ben Maxwell with Sam Robson. And Sam, it is a banner day for J-Talk. What a guest we have with us this week.
Yeah, well, I'm really looking forward to this episode. We've got a fascinating guest. I've enjoyed just researching her over the last week. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to talk to her about Nadacare and about her career. Really looking forward to it. Should be a good episode.
Indeed. Ami Otaki is our guest. And I'll have to come clean here. The tagline of the podcast used to be covering all aspects of Japanese football. Well, I mean, we've never really covered women's football at all. But, yeah, there could be no better guest to do it with than Ami. And we'll get to her very shortly. But, right off the top, Sam, hot off the presses, there's some decent news after the state of emergency was lifted across Japan about a potential return of the J-League.
Yeah, very positive news. The kind of rumoured date for a return, I think, is the 4th of July. I think that was Spinelli, I believe, that have come up with that. I don't think there's a meeting until Friday where we'll actually get the exact confirmation. But, yeah, it looks like J-League will return without fans to start with, and they've gone with this interesting idea of limiting travel by splitting all the teams into three separate groups based on location, with just Sapporo kind of basing themselves on the mainland just for the time being. So, yeah, definitely positive news and something we can, there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Indeed, indeed. So you might have seen it on Twitter on Tuesday, listeners, we're not sure, but if you haven't, the three groups, I guess the northern group, we have to call it because the Sapporo's in it. Sapporo, Sendai, Kashima, Urawa, Kashiwa, and FC Tokyo would make up one group of six clubs. Obviously, very sensibly, the four Kanagawa clubs are all in the same group. Kawasaki, Yokohama F. Marinos, Yokohama FC, and Shonan, with Shimizu and Nagoya rounding out that group of six. And then, yeah, the clubs basically west of Nagoya, the two Osaka clubs, Kobe, Hiroshima, and then down in Kyushu, Sagan Tosu and Oita Trinita would make up the other group of the last group of six clubs, I should say. And, so as Sam said, without fans to begin with, and we're not really sure what would happen in, these groups of clubs. They might play a round robin, Sam, to begin with, and then they'll see what the situation's like after that until they can start to mix up the geographical nature of things a bit more.
Yeah, we don't know the exact details at the moment, but that does make sense. If you keep it within these regions, you will get these games out of the way, and then hopefully the situation improves so you can go and travel further. I think it is a good idea. You've got to limiting the travel definitely makes sense. It's a shame, really, from a sporting perspective, that a lot of these big derby games are going to probably go ahead without fans, that's the biggest drawback for me, but I think needs must in the situation, and it's just something we're going to have to deal with.
Indeed, and if you want to know J-Talk's official policy on piping crowd noise into empty stadiums, then check out last week's episode of Extra Time with John and Stuart. And it was good to hear, see Sean Carroll's thoughts as well on Twitter, and I echo those. That's positive news. And we should state again that those groups of six clubs are only rumoured at this stage, but again, they do make sense in a geographical sense. And no word yet as to what J2 and J3 might look like once they are ready to resume as well. Of course, we had Jason Koskry on talking NPB last week. It was a great chat with him. And he'll be excited because the state of emergency was lifted and NPB were straight on the case. And it appears that professional baseball in Japan will return on the 19th of June. So they'll get at least a 2-week head start on the J-League. But you can't fault the J-League for wanting to make sure that everything is as right as it can be before play resumes for us on the pitch. All right, well, it's just about time to get to our chat with Ami. We did get some great questions from Patreon as well. And Sam and I have decided that, rather than breaking up the flow of the conversation by saying who asked which question at which time we'll just ask them naturally. And right off the top, we'd like to thank Johnny, Stuart S, John and Steve F for their questions. Hopefully you'll be able to pick up when yours were asked within the flow of the episode. Without any further ado, let's dial up Ami Otaki. I won't go on for too long here at the start, but our guest this week is a Japan international, a European Champions League and Nadeshko League winner, amongst her other playing honours, and a FIFA master and the founder of an NPO off the pitch. Sam and I are thrilled to welcome Ami Otaki to the podcast. Ami, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Excellent, thank you. It's great to be speaking with you. Thank you so much for taking the time to join Sam and myself. Sam, we have to admit that when one of our new Patreon supporters, Dapo, or Giancarlo to his friends, got in touch with us and said that he knew Ami and he might be able to get her to come onto the podcast, I can't say we knew a lot about Ami, did we? But in doing our research, she's led a fascinating career in football, and it's going to be fantastic to speak to her about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Nadeshko League has not really made its way to British shores at the moment. But yeah, as you say, doing the research, Ami seems to have had a fascinating career, and I can't wait to dive into it a little bit more.
Okay, so Ami, let's start at the end, I guess. You have founded an NPO called Nadecare. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about how it started and, what it's all about?
Okay, well, first of all, thank you very much for having me on the show. It really means a lot to be given the opportunity to talk about Nadecare with you and also about women's football in Japan. So, well, let's start the general overview of Nadecare. Well, Nadecare is a non-profit multi-purpose project which aims to include the social value of women's football in Japan and in turn provide a source of inspiration and a sense of purpose to female footballers. It was created in July 2019 by me, Saki Kumagai, the captain of the Japan women's national team, and Yukari Kinga, a former international who played in 3 World Cups. And we have now 12 players serving as a core member of the organization. Our 3 main missions are to grow participation, to increase the social value of women's football, and to inspire and empower female footballers in Japan. In order to put these missions in place, we run various initiatives mainly focusing on, first, the development of women's football, second, career building activities, and third, CSR functions. Nadecare is new and very unique because it is an organization that is created by players, run by players, and developed by players. So this is our general overview of Nadecare.
You said there that one of the kind of main aims is to inspire young girls to take up football and whatnot. Who was your inspiration both for creating Nadecare and just to get into football in general?
Well, actually, when I was young, female football was not really huge at the moment, so I didn't really have like a football role model in that moment. So my role model was always like an older player in the local club and things like this. So, well, this is, so I haven't really had like a role model, or I just having done what I wanted to do. So, yeah.
All right. So, Ami, when you were little, was it easy for you to play organized football? As a child in Japan, did your parents and school teachers, etc., support you in your dream to become a footballer?
Well, yeah, because it wasn't so difficult. I started at the local club with boys. So it wasn't far to travel and stuff. So it wasn't difficult at the beginning. But then from a junior high school student, so when I was 13 years old, I joined in a club team for like a girl team. And I had to travel for 1 hour and to train. So like, obviously, we need support from my parents, and, like, not everybody can do it. Like, we need, like, financial support from family. But fortunately, my parents supported. So, yeah, it was okay. It was not difficult for me. It was okay.
Since you turned professional back in 2012, how do you feel the women's game has evolved and grown in Japan? And are there still lessons that can be learned from other leagues across the world, maybe like the USA or Europe?
Okay, so it was 2012 when I was turned into the professional player, just after Japan national team won the World Cup in 2011. And so, well, compared to that point, in terms of participation, I think it has been growing a lot. Like, I can see many girls playing in the park and playing with boys, so I could see the change, the growth of the women's football in that sense. But then at the same time, I feel like we're a bit far behind compared to European nations where it comes to professionalization. Like, after winning the World Cup, the fact that the most players were working aside football was featured, and it was considered as a value of women's football at that moment. And after 9 years has passed from there, most of players are still considered as a amateur player and working aside football. So also the condition has gradually been improved. I cannot really say that there is much difference compared to after the time that first I turned into professional player.
Okay, so I want to get back on to Nadikare and also obviously talk about the progression of your career, Ami. But, I mean, you've touched on the World Cup win there. And I believe at that time in 2011, you were at Waseda University playing for the university team there. So as a young woman who had just entered her 20s and, you know, you wanted to make your name as a professional footballer yourself, what did that mean to you to see your country win the World Cup? It must have just been amazing.
Yeah, definitely it was amazing. Well, I couldn't believe, because I think most, like, no one believed that they could win the World Cup at the moment. So I was just a university student, one of the girl dreaming being playing for national team. And I was watching the games on TV, but not believing that they will win the World Cup. But then it was unbelievable, especially we were suffering for the big earthquake and it happened in 2010.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, so it was, it's difficult to say, but it was just amazing and I was really moved what they have achieved.
And so part of setting up Nadikare is to hopefully provide some inspiration for young girls who want to play football, and, you know, you yourself and Saki Kumagai and Yukari Kinga show them that it's possible, and you try and get out and talk to as many young girls as you can and show them that, you know, if you have this dream, it is possible. Just look at us.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And so I'm nicking one of Sam's questions here, Ami, but so what does a typical workshop or a study session at Nadikare consist of? What do you try and get across to the girls in the sessions that you run for them?
Well, now at the moment, we're really focusing on helping player to think about what is our value as a female footballer, or like what is value of women's football, because I feel like there's a huge lack of professionalism in women's football. Maybe because of the status of as amateur status, and also like women's footballer tend to think that we're just a women's footballer, no one's care, no one's watching. So I think we really need to change this mindset. So for now, we're really focusing on, you know, thinking about the value or what is our responsibility to society and stuff like this. But then at the same time, we don't like this. We don't have like a. We don't fix the context of a workshop. So we did, for example, we did one workshop to how to learn how to fundraise for Nada Care, and also like how to decrease sexual harassment in sports, because it happened recently in women's football. So we didn't fix it, but for the moment, we're really focusing on the value, our value, and then the value of women's football.
Just on that, at the moment, there's kind of a current bidding process for the 2023 Women's World Cup. What do you think a successful Japan bid for that would do for the development of women's football when it kind of brings it more into the public eye and it's given that kind of pedestal? Will that inspire, would you hope that would inspire more female footballers in Japan to take up the game?
Yeah, definitely. Well, a few years ago, there was a World Cup, under 19 World Cup, Women's World Cup in Japan. And then I think it helped inspire a lot of girls playing football. So I think the same thing will be happening again. So I really hope that Japan will win the bid.
Yep, absolutely. I have to sit on the fence here, Ami, because Australia and New Zealand are bidding as well. So I hope that either Japan or Australia and New Zealand get it. But we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. So obviously we're going to come on to talk about your career in Europe, in the Nadesco League, etc. And one of our Patreon supporters is very curious to know what you studied at Waseda University, because he works there at the moment. But sorry, this is kind of an in-depth question to ask you as we move off Nutty Care for the moment. But I mentioned at the start you've done the FIFA Master course. Would you have been able to set up Nutty Care? Again, you're working with Saki and Yukari, I know, but would you have been able to do this without having done the FIFA Master course? Did that kind of give you the what's the right word? Did it give you the, I don't know, the incentive or the motivation to try and give back to the game by starting an organization like this?
Yes, definitely. But I didn't think when I was doing master, I didn't think that I would go back to the game again. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, in the master, we're studying about sports, and afterwards we watched the football and then played football. So I spend more time thinking about football, maybe more than when I was playing football. And then it made me feel like playing football again. And then my friends will really try to push me to try it again, because I was still 26 years old at the moment. Mm. And it was an Olympic game in front of me in 3 years after the graduation. So that was, which is not so far, but not too close neither. So it made me decide to go back to the game. And then definitely, I wouldn't think about creating this organization without doing the FIFA Master.
So we'll touch on that later as well, hopefully. Now, John really wants to know, what was your major study at Waseda University, Ami?
My major was in sports science when I was in university, Waseda University. So, like, I learned many wide range of areas in sports, like from stretching, massaging, even like taping, like medical side of sports, and at the same time, like business side of sports, and the culture, like history. So many like broad areas of sports I learned. So yeah, it was very interesting.
All right, cool. So yeah, you went to Waseda and John works there. I don't know, is there a secret handshake that you both know or something? Or maybe you can do that somewhere down the line. So you moved from Waseda University to Olympique Lyon in France. Absolutely amazing. I couldn't believe it when I saw that. How did that come about? I mean, you left a university club team in Japan and you went to play for basically the best club team in the world. How did that happen?
Yeah, so, well, I was, since when I was 14 years old, I was dreaming of playing in abroad. So since then, I was kind of looking forward to the opportunity to go to play for the clubs in, like, overseas, abroad. And then, well, and then in 2011, when I was, the last year of university, I played for university competition. And then I played two games against France, and I scored, I think, 4 goals against France.
Terrific, wow.
Yeah, so I was a bit lucky. And then the coach at the time of the France was the assistant coach of Lyon. So he offered me to take the trial test after this competition. So I went there for 1 week to get the trial test. And yeah. And then after that, I signed for the Lyon. Yeah, so it was unbelievable.
A few months later, you won the Champions League.
Yes, a few months later, yeah.
Wow, so, okay, you saw Japan win the World Cup, and then, the next year you won the Champions League yourself. I mean, how none of us listening will ever know what that feels like. What did that feel like? I mean, you got to get on the pitch for the last few minutes as well, so... The full time whistle goes and you're the champion of Europe. How do you feel?
Okay, so when the Japan won the World Cup in 2011, I was just a university student watching it on TV. And then, well, at that moment, I didn't believe that I would be playing for Lyon and then at the same time playing for the national team in the next year. But then. Yeah, just a year later from there, yeah, I played for Lyon and then I was in the pitch on the final of the Women's Champions League. And I couldn't remember much about the game because I was so focused and then at the same time I was nervous. But it was an amazing feeling to be part of the team and a part of the champions of Europe. But at the same time, it's not that I played like a full game, so I couldn't really feel like I have contributed to the win, but it was amazing. And then this is the moment that I cannot forget forever.
Unbelievable. Yeah, it's kind of an achievement that very few people can say they've had, especially so early on in your career. I'm just wondering, when you win the Champions League, when you win a Club World Cup, you represent your national team all so early, how easy is it to retain your drive for football at that point, when you seem to have accomplished almost everything there is to accomplish so quickly?
It was just amazing, and I was learning a lot every day to play with lots of great players who were playing for the national teams and in each country. So this, like, I was young, so I was just this motivated me, like, and made me think that I want to be like them one day. So I just learned a lot every day from the practice, from the game, even though I didn't play a lot of games from Lyon when I was in Lyon. But then, like, every day's practice was just so much things to learn. So it was my motivation. And I really enjoyed every single day, every single practices, I think, yeah.
And so in 2012, you made your debut for the Nadeshko, the Japan women's national team. So as we've said, just 1 year after they won the World Cup. So what was that like to join that group, that first day of training? Because, I mean, you hadn't played professionally in Japan, right? You'd left Waseda and gone to France. So when you were called up for the first time, yeah. do you remember your experience and how you felt the first training session, the first couple of training sessions with that great squad that had conquered the world?
Yeah, I definitely remember, and I remember that it was not easy because I didn't. I've never played for Japanese league, so nobody knows me, basically. Well, they know me, but they are not friends, or I haven't spoken to them. So it was very difficult at the beginning. I felt alone a bit. But there are some players that I played together when I was playing for under 19 national team. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was quite difficult at the beginning.
Yeah, I can imagine. So, so what about the first time then that you pulled on the blue kit and you stepped onto the pitch in a Japan shirt? That must have just been an amazing, magical feeling.
Yeah, well, especially when I stand on the pitch and then singing the national anthem, it was special. I was almost crying. I don't know why, but then, yeah, I think this was kind of achievement. And I feel like I was thinking of what I have done, for my career and stuff. So, yeah, it was a very unforgettable moment in my career, I think.
Yeah, unbelievable. So, I could ask you 10 more questions about that experience because, I mean, that was such an amazing, amazing team with Sawa, Miyama, and, Kumagai and Kinga as well. I mean, they were really important parts of that squad as well, weren't they? So, we want to move on and we don't want to keep you all night, Ami. So, I think Sam and I, we were texting amongst ourselves while we were getting ready to do this podcast, Ami, and a lot of different points in your career, we were asking ourselves why. We want to know why you left the best club team in the world in Lyon, and you went to play for Urawa Reds. I'm an FC Tokyo supporter, Ami, so I'm finding that choice difficult to understand. But yeah, I mean, obviously, you were very successful at Reds. You stopped Ainak Kobe's run of consecutive Nedesco League championships. So it was obviously the right decision because you won the league when you came back to Japan. But if you can, what made you leave the best team, the best club team in the world, and come back to play in the Nedesco League? Was it homesickness? Was it you weren't getting enough games at Lyon? You weren't feeling, I don't know, I shouldn't put words in your mouth. So, yeah, why?
Yeah, I think I was a bit burned out after having this dream since I was young. And then after winning the Champions League Club World Cup, and then winning the championship in France, and I felt like I have done what I wanted to do in football. So I was kind of felt like burned out.
Yep.
But then at the same time, I didn't want to quit yet because I was just 24 and it has been just 1 year and a half since I started the professional career. So this is one of the reasons. And then, I wanted to see, I just wanted to try in Japanese league because I have never played and then I didn't know what I can do there or what the level is. So, I wanted to explain what the Japanese league is like. So this is the reason why I decided to go back to Japan and apply for Real Red. So a bit of burnout. But still, I wanted to try to play for your national team. So, yeah, this is the reason why I came back to Japan.
Pretty quickly, you went back to France with Guingamp. Is there something special for you about playing football in France that kind of brought you back?
Yes, well, I think, and then after having played for Rawa 1 year and a half, then at the moment, I couldn't really enjoy playing football anymore because I didn't play so much and many games for Rawa neither. So I felt like maybe I was not good enough to play in the top level. So, but then I wanted to give me the last chance. So, and then it was during the season, so I wanted to, I didn't want to move from the, within Japan during the season. So then I was thinking of going back to Europe. Then I started to contact the clubs, and then I only know French clubs. So, and then I like France, and then this is where I first played as a professional player. So I wanted to try, give me the last try in France. So I decided to go back to France for, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's, yeah, amazing. Fantastic. And so then, yeah, after a few appearances with Gangomp, I don't think my pronunciation is as good as Sam's there, but I don't know, did you actually retire or did you just stop playing with the intention of going back in the future, or had you decided when you left Gangomp that you were finished?
No, actually, I completely retired from the, so hung up the boots.
Right.
And I didn't think that I will come back to the game again. So, yeah, I retired completely on that at that point.
Okay. Yeah. So then the FIFA Master, which is obviously, I don't know, obviously. It sounds like it's a very difficult course to get into, to undertake. So was it difficult to get into it in the first place, and then how much work goes into it on a on a regular basis? You're obviously studying very hard.
Yes, but so basically the application is online platform, and then I had to write like a 5 or 6 small thesis, and then if you are accepted, then you will have like Skype interview as a second test. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I studied a lot as well, but I think my career as a footballer helped a lot to be selected as one of the students in the edition.
Okay. Yeah right. So you were part of the 17th group. I think it was 17th, was it? You want to jump in there, Sam? Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to ask to kind of get an overview of what exactly the FIFA Master degree was and, like, what sort of things were learned during the course.
Ah, okay. Well, so FIFA Master is an international master program run by CIES, which is a sports study center located in Neuchâtel, Switzerland, and endorsed by FIFA. So it consists of 3 modules in distinguished university in 3 different countries. And the first module was a sports history and humanity at De Montfort University in Leicester, England. And the second module is sports management at Bocconi University in Milano, Italy. And the last module is sport and law at Université de Neuchâtel in Neuchâtel, Switzerland. And this program combines academic teaching and practical case studies supplemented by guest lectures and field visits. And I think, well, this unique program makes FIFA Master special, but at the same time, what makes it even more special is that the everyday life with extreme diverse group of people who have complete different culture and value. I think this helps us to understand the international context that sports has and make us ready to work for international sporting organization. So this is more or less a program. And then, well, as you might know, Tsune Miyamoto, former captain of the national team, did this FIFA Master before.
Yes.
And I had my classmate, Jisung Park, as a classmate.
Very jealous.
Yeah. Some famous players, like men's famous players as well. So it was very good to study with him for 1 year. I learned a lot from him. Played football sometimes, so it was very good.
Did those sorts of people and kind of that environment help you kind of fall back in love with the game?
Yeah, definitely. Because, well, my classmates always speak about football, like play football, try to play football, try to make time to football. So this makes me realize how happy to be play as a professional footballer. So yeah, it helped me a lot, I think.
So then you went back to playing in 2017 after graduating from the course.
Yes.
And so Paris FC, tell us about that experience, how it came about, and how much you enjoyed getting back out on the pitch again after a couple of years away.
Yeah, so, well, since I have decided to go back to the game, it was like a 3 or 4 months before the graduation. So I contacted the club. So I went to the trial test in Bayern Munich and also Atletico Madrid. But unfortunately, I got injured during the trial, so I couldn't really play. So, well, the moment I couldn't sign for any clubs, and then I was looking for the French clubs as well again, and then one of my classmate is from France, and he knows someone from the Paris FC, so he talked to him, and then. Yeah, so this is how I found a club. And yes, I thought it would be very difficult at the beginning because I've been absent from the game for 2 years. And then last 1 year I was studying and then I played football, but it's not like I played every day. So I was worried a bit, but it was all right actually. It was hard at the beginning of the preseason. The running, physical training was a bit hard. But then I really enjoyed the going back to the game again. So, yeah, it was very nice. And then, well, before I retired for the first time, I didn't really enjoy playing football. So I was really happy to enjoy playing football again and in the top level. So, yeah, it was very good. Yeah.
Let's wrap up your playing career then, Ami, because I should have said at the top, you are obviously still an active player. You're on the books at Jeff United Chiba Ladies after you'd come back to Japan to play in the Nadeshiko Division 2 League for the Nippatsu Yokohama FC Seagulls. So, yeah, what's it been like to... you obviously returned to football in France, but, yeah, what's it been like to come back to the Nadeshiko League for the second time in your career, and again after you found your love for football again? So, I mean, it must have been great to get back onto the pitch in Japan.
Yes. Well, I chose for the first team. I started Nippatsu Yokohama FC Seagulls as a first team to come back because I wanted to make sure that I play a game, like I constantly play a game. And then I think I thought it's really important to be able to play for 2020 Olympic Games. So so this is why I came back to Yokohama FC Seagulls as a first team. And then I really enjoyed playing at there. And then scoring lots of goals, and then I was in the top scorer in the league. And then, in the second year, I decided to go to play for the first division to maximize the possibility to play for the Olympic Games as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and then I really enjoyed playing football there, and my parents obviously came all the games to watch my games. So, yeah, it's very nice to come back and then play in Japan.
Absolutely. So how would you compare the standard then between the French league and, the first and the second division of the Nadeshiko League? Obviously, the French, the really, really good French clubs are, you know, top class in all of the world club women's club football teams. But, I mean, the overall level of the Nadeshiko League compared to, you know, the French League and also the other European clubs that you would have played against in the Champions League as well.
Yeah, well, I think Japanese League he's quite high standard when it comes to the level of playing. In France, it's like Lyon and Paris Saint-Germain and then Montpellier, like these top clubs are leading, and then, well, the bottom teams is still developing. So there is a huge gap still between the top team and the bottom team. But then in Japanese league, there's not such a big difference between the top team and bottom team. So the league is quite competitive. So when you compare the level of the top teams, maybe the European leagues is higher, but then the compared to like overall level playing, then I think Japanese league, Nadeshiko league is not bad. I think it's quite high standard, I would say.
Okay, that's very good to hear. So, so you mentioned there your target of playing at the 2020 Olympics, Ami. So, obviously, this coronavirus, COVID-19 situation has been, devastating for so many people around the world. And, I mean, the Olympics being postponed for 1 year isn't such a huge thing in the, in terms of what's happened to so many people around the world. So we don't want to, we don't want to pretend that it's this huge tragedy. But, I mean, for you personally, you set that goal for yourself when you returned to play professional football. So the fact that you might have to wait for another year and you'll be 1 year older in 2021 when the Olympics hopefully take place next year. I mean, has that, I don't want to bring you down, but has that affected your motivation at all? Or are you still very, very determined to make the Olympic squad when it hopefully happens next year?
Well, actually, it motivates me even more because, well, if it happens in 2020, it was very difficult because I was not chosen even once last year as in a squad. So the chances was very little when it happened, if it happened in 2020. So I was almost giving up, but I didn't give up. But then, well, this gives me more time to prepare and then more time to show, to appeal, to be in the squad. So, well, I'm not sure if it's right to say, but yeah, this actually helped me to motivate and keep trying to be in a squad. Yeah.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah, just on that point, when you're kind of wanting games to prove yourself, and obviously at the moment we can't play any football at all, how has the kind of situation affected you professionally? How are you dealing with the training away from people? And, yeah, how has it kind of affected your club and their preparations for the season?
Yeah, it has not been definitely easy. And then we were supposed to start the league at the end of March, but then we couldn't play any games. So it's like doing pre-season for 4 months or 5 months. So it's not easy, but then at the same time, we just have to do what we can do. And then in order to be better when we finally can play. So yeah, it's been difficult, but then I'm trying to do what I can do right now. And also to try to improve what my weak points, and yeah, so I'm trying not to be negative, and then what I can do.
Have you been able to train normally as a team, or have there been times that you've all had to train from home or do video messages or whatnot where you're all training separately? How's it kind of worked?
No, I've not been training as a team, so just only by myself. But sometimes what trainer would do like Zoom training, and then like a weight training with a trainer, and so we had this kind of thing sometimes, and online meetings as well, but we couldn't train as a team, so just individually to train. Yeah, so yeah, this is what we've done for 2 months.
Pretty fascinating. Such a difference from the way everything is normally run. It must be so weird to try and work on, even if you're doing tactics or something, just without being there as a group. Do you have any idea when you might be able to join back up with your teammates now the kind of emergency situation has been lifted?
Yeah, we're not sure yet, but for sure, I think now club is trying to find a facility to train. So ideally from this weekend, but we're not sure yet. But the league released that we're officially allowed to train with the team. So hopefully it will happen soon, but we're not sure yet.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's fantastic news. I mean, that's great. And yeah, I'm sure you can't wait to get, to meet up with your teammates again and, get stuck into it. So we've got a few more questions before we wrap up. And once again, Sam and I and all the listeners, we really appreciate your time. I asked you a little bit earlier about the standard of the Nadesco League versus the French League and some of the other, the leagues in Europe. What do you think might be the best strategy to help the Nadesco League grow in the future? Do you think teams completely partnering with men's clubs using the same name? I mean, you've played for Urawa Reds and you've played for Jeff United Chiba. Or do you think that teams should be separated from men's teams, such as INAC Kobe? What do you think is the best way to help the Nadesco League grow? Or is it a mixture of the two? I mean, that's perfectly fine as well, as it is at the moment.
I think it's really difficult to say which is better and then which is not. Because one side, for example, teams partnering with men's club, they have already fan bases. So, and then also resources available to facilitate, to promote women's football. But then probably the separated team, like Anna Kobe, has funds are more loyal to the club compared to the clubs for partnering with men's club. So it's difficult to say which is better and which is not. So I think it's good to have a good mixture of those clubs. But then for the players' perspective, I think for like the clubs that are with men's club, women's team is not treated same as men's team. I think players kind of feel like they are not important in the team. So I think it's important to make ideal relationship between women's and men's team, like to inspire each other and create multiple effects for each other. So I think the clubs really need to change the way to communicate to the players and then to let players know that they are all as important as men's players.
Yep, I understand. That's a good answer. And just a couple more on what it's like as a professional women's footballer. I mean, outside of the national team players, and I mean the top players at the best clubs in the Nadesco League, is it tough for women's footballers to make a decent living during and after their career? I mean, obviously there's much less money in the women's game than the men's.
I think the most of the players don't make money from out the football, so they're amateur player, so they're working aside football. So, well, at least if they play for a club, they will have a job. So it's not that they have difficulties in making living. Most of them are making money for not out of football, but working for the sponsors of the club. So, yeah. it's not that we're making a lot of money like men's do, but we have decent amount of money to, well, enough money to live, to make our live.
Sure. Okay. That's great. That's good to hear. So, yeah, a couple of more broader questions before we finish, Ami. We mentioned much earlier on in our conversation about the about Japan trying to win the bid for the 2023 Women's World Cup. It's I don't know if it's been confirmed, but there's a, it might expand from 24 to 32 nations. Do you think there are enough quality international teams to allow this move to be successful, or do you feel that it's a little bit too soon?
I feel like maybe it's a bit too soon. I imagine, well, obviously the aim of the expand is to facilitate the investment in women's football in each national federation, but I'm not sure, I have doubt if this expanded facilitated the investment in certain region and countries. So this could, there is a huge risk of damaging the image of Women's World Cup by being less competitive and entertaining event if they expand to 32 teams from 24. So I think FIFA really needs to make sure that each association has fund available for women's football. And if not, probably help them in order to keep the brand of Women's World Cup as the most prestigious women's competition that where every girl's playing football dreaming of. So I'm a bit worried of this. But anyway, this has already been decided. So let's see what's going to happen, but I'm a bit concerned.
Well, there you go. Okay, thanks for I didn't realize that it had been decided. So, okay, yeah, 32 teams. Obviously, we know that if Japan wins the bid, that Japan is capable of hosting a World Cup for 32 nations. But, yeah, it's that's going to be, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if your, yeah, your concerns are, yeah, born out on the pitch. So, yeah, a couple more. So, Ami, what future hopes do you have for the future of women's football in Japan? And obviously, you're hoping that Nadeke can, yeah, help a little bit in that regard as well, helping the future of the women's game.
Yes, well, I think, well, 2021... we're planning to professionalize the domestic league. So I really hope that we will make the great result in a global event. And also, I want to make Nadeke grow and enhance, probably to and an enhance global presence of Japanese football in both on and off the pitch.
Would you ever consider running for a position within the footballing authorities?
Well, at this moment, I'm really focusing on growing Nadeke. So, and then probably for the time being, I want to make Nadeke grow so that it will play an important role in development of women's football in Japan. Yeah, but at the same time, I think it is essential to have more female representation in position, and then make the boys stronger in order to progress the diversification of Japanese football. So, well, maybe if there is an opportunity, even though I don't know how, when and where. Yeah. Maybe in the future.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Good luck. It's yeah. I certainly we'll all be following you very closely in the future. And yeah, once the Nadeshko League gets up and running, yeah, we hope you're out there running around and banging in the goals, Ami. So let's do a few plugs before we wrap up. So once again, it's the Ami's NPO is called Nuddycare. You can find it on the internet at nuddycare.jp, at Nuddycare on Twitter. And Ami, your personal account is at Amigyon, Amigyon. That's right, isn't it?
Yes, it's right.
Okay, so what can our listeners do to support you and support Nuddycare, Ami? What does Nuddycare need? Do they need retweets on Twitter? Do they need donations of money, of footballing equipment? I don't know. The floor is yours. What can we do to help Nuddycare?
Well, it would be great if the listeners can help to promote Nuddycare, because at this moment there are not many people know about Nuddycare, and I really want to promote the Nuddycare. So it'd be great if you can post the about Nuddycare in the social medias, and also happy to have funding always.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, hopefully our listeners, will come to the party. I mean, I just want to put all our listeners on notice. At the moment, at Nuddycare on Twitter currently has 1,784 followers. If that's not over 2,000 by the end of May, I'm going to be very angry, and I'm going to be hunting down all of our listeners and asking them why they're not following at Nuddycare on Twitter. what can I say? It's been absolutely fantastic to speak with you. English is not your first language, but you've done a fantastic job throughout this podcast answering questions from Sam, myself, and our Patreon supporters. I shouldn't say questions from me. All of the questions I've asked you have been Sam's anyway. It's been fantastic to speak with you. Thank you ever so much, and we wish you all the best in the future with Nuddycare and everything you do on the pitch as well.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure. And then thank you very much for having me. Thank you very much.
All right. So thanks ever so much again to Ami and Dapo for setting up this interview. We couldn't have done it without you, Dapo. So thank you very much. Sam and I will be back in a minute to wrap up the podcast. All right, Sam. What a fantastic chat that was. Ami has led such an interesting life, and she's had such an interesting career. It's obviously not finished with yet, but fantastic to get her perspective on what's been a fascinating life in football so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And a pleasure to speak to her. Cracking guest, and very interesting. Everything that she's been through, all of her career, was a really good, fascinating listen for me, and hopefully the same can be said for the listeners.
Indeed, indeed. So once again, before we wrap, thanks to Ami and thanks to Dapo for helping us line up our chat with Ami. So now, that box is ticked off, or those boxes are ticked off, Sam. We've spoken to a Japan international and a European Champions League winner and a FIFA master. But who would have thought that we'd be able to do that all in the space of one podcast?
Absolutely. I'm not sure where we go from here. I think maybe we just have to wrap it up and call it a day. We've peaked.
Well, we definitely have to going to start thinking for ourselves, because we're plumb out of ideas now from our Patreon supporters. Of course, Sven, Mike, I, and now Dapo have helped us out over the last month or so. So, we're going to have to put our heads down and think of what we're going to come up with next week. But you were telling me earlier we might be becoming the K-Talk podcast.
Absolutely. I've just kind of returned to work today with football kind of going on. I just received an email that makes it seem like I'm the new K-League analyst for at least a little while going forward. So, we're going to have a rival podcast, I think, to the K-League United boys. And a bit more Korean talk might come to J-Talk.
There you go. Yeah, look out, K-League United, we're coming for you. Or a nicer way to say it is that, Sam is now a gun for hire for K-League United. I know you've appeared on their platforms quite a few times over the years, Sam, so they might be getting in touch with you a little bit more. Who knows? But, that is to come in the future. And if you are on the K-League beat, then, I hope you enjoy it. Obviously, that would be good to get some football watched in Asia before the J-League returns, as we said, hopefully very early in July. All right, well, yeah, Sam, we will leave it there, and I look forward to catching up with you again next week.
Yeah, speak to you next week.
All right, then, that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. On behalf of Sam Robson, I'd like to thank Ami Otaki and Dapo for setting up our chat once again. And, of course, thanks to you for listening wherever you are. We really hope you've enjoyed this episode, and we hope you get following Nutty Care on Twitter. Again, it's got to be over 2,000 by the end of May, or I'm coming for you. Speak to you again next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.